This is Harv Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast, and when I start my workday, it always begins with that morning shower. Normally, I use a liquid body wash, but recently I purchased a bar of Sterling Soap Company's handcrafted bath soap and decided to give their Deep Blue Sea handcrafted bath soap a try. Immediately, the aroma of Sterling's bath soap was obvious, and in using this soap, I felt refreshed, clean, energized, and Sterling's bath soap helped me step out of that shower with the momentum and eagerness to get my day rolling. If you want to get a refreshing wake-up call in the morning and get your busy day off to the right start, I highly recommend going to Sterling Soap Company's website and order one of their many varieties of bath soaps among other products they offer. Visit Sterling Soap Company at sterlingsoap.com. That's S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G soap.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Welcome to the Pro Football Time Machine. This is your host, Tom Pollen, along with Zozo the Cat. Before we start our journey, please take a moment to click on the subscribe button so you're ready to join Zozo and I each time we make a trip into the past. Now, join us as we slip from the present day through the time portal and begin our journey. Bronco Nagurski was a force on the gridiron for the Chicago Bears in the early years of the NFL. Nagurski was a punishing runner who left tacklers sprawled on the field in his wake. As a blocker, he created the running room for fellow Bears back Beatty Feathers to surpass 1,000 rushing yards in 1934, a record no NFL runner would surpass until 1947, when Philadelphia Eagles running back Steve Van Buren gained 1,008 yards. As a passer, his touchdown pass to Red Grange led Chicago to victory in the unofficial 1932 NFL championship game over Patsy Clark and the Portsmouth Spartans. All that, and I'm not even mentioning Broncos' ferocious play at defensive tackle. Nagurski was a charter member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1963 and is still, in mine and Zozo's opinion, the greatest fullback to ever play in the NFL. The one area of Broncos' life that usually gets overlooked is the athletic ability he displayed off the gridiron, mainly in the wrestling ring. So much has been said and written about Nagurski's domination on the football field. Now, it's time to enjoy Broncos' exploits in the wrestling ring. As a boy, Nagurski worked on his parents' farm. He also delivered groceries for his father's grocery store. Later, he worked at a nearby timber operation. All that work in his youth developed Bronco into a 6-foot, 2-inch block of granite. Nagurski's discovery by University of Minnesota football coach Clarence Spears began a journey that led to the Chicago Bears and a Hall of Fame football career. That is a story to be told when we look at the fullback's legendary career on the gridiron. Right now, let's dive into what drove Bronco into the wrestling ring. In 1930, for his rookie season, Nagurski signed a $5,000 contract with the Chicago Bears. Despite his exceptional play on offense and defense for Chicago, his salary varied widely over the next couple of seasons due to the Great Depression and George Halas's legendary tight wallet. By 1932, Bronco's salary had dropped to $3,700 per season. Following his 1932 season, Nagurski met Tony Stecher, brother of Joe Stecher, a 3-time world heavyweight wrestling champion. Tony Stecher introduced Nagurski to wrestling and signed on as Broncos manager. In February of 1933, Nagurski wrestled in his first match, beating Tag Taggerson in 2 minutes and 14 seconds. Bronco settled into a schedule of wrestling from January to July, then playing football from September to December. In 1937, Nagurski's football salary had recovered to $5,000 per season. He attempted to get a raise to $6,000 for 1938, but Halas refused. At that point, Bronco was becoming well-known on the wrestling circuit and making good money. Nagurski decided to retire from football and begin wrestling full-time. Along with standard wrestling holds, Bronco brought some moves from the football field into the ring with him. When Nagurski had an opponent on the ropes, he'd deliver a rapid series of headbutts to the midsection. Coming off the ropes, Bronco would throw himself at his opponent in what was called a flying tackle. He was a man who had opposing players on a football field shaking in their cleats when they saw him charging at them. Imagine what opposing wrestlers thought when Nagurski launched his 220-plus pounds at them. Finally, if an opponent let Bronco get under them, he could deliver a body slam that could be felt throughout the arena. Nagurski won the National Wrestling Association heavyweight title, Minneapolis version, on June 29, 1937, over Dean Detton. Detton had been awarded the national title in 1936 by the NWA, but failed to defend it against a ranked challenger. One of Bronco's title defenses that still exist on film was on August 11, 1937, against Vincent Lopez. Nagurski won an extended first fall, knocking out Lopez in the process. He finished off Lopez quickly for a second fall to retain his championship. During a 21-day period in 1937, Nagurski played in 5 games with the Bears and defended his title 8 times. On November 18, 1938, Nagurski faced Jim Landos in an undisputed title match. Landos was small at 5'8", but was quick and powerful for his size. He spent the 1930s as one of the most popular wrestlers worldwide. He's remembered for selling out arenas nationwide and introducing the sleeper hold into wrestling. Bronco dominated the early part of the match with his size and strength. A mix of forearm smashes and headbutts had Landos struggling to stay off the mat. Nagurski kept up the attack with flying tackles and leg twists. Even when Landos looked to be gaining the upper hand, Bronco quickly reversed the hold to gain another advantage. Finally, Landos gained advantage over a tiring Nagurski. A series of airplane spins sent Nagurski repeatedly to the mat, with Landos securing the pin after the final spin. Nagurski recaptured the title on June 23, 1939, over Lou Thesz. Thesz was a complete athlete and one of the greatest champions in the history of the sport. He was known for his speed, conditioning, and expertise in legitimate wrestling, but it wasn't enough to overcome the power that Bronco possessed. Then, on March 7, 1940, Bronco faced Ray Steele, his biggest rival in the National Wrestling Association. Steele was a match for Bronco in size. However, while Nagurski relied on his size and strength to overcome opponents, Steele was an excellent technical wrestler. Steele won the championship that evening in St. Louis, but Bronco won it back from Steele on March 11, 1941. Nagurski lost the title 3 months later to Sander Szabo. That was Bronco's final National Wrestling Association heavyweight championship. Nagurski retired from professional wrestling in 1942. In 1943, the United States was fighting World War II on 2 fronts, against Japan in the South Pacific and Germany in Europe. The armed forces were stretched thin and pulling all the manpower they could, including from all major sports leagues. Nagurski was declared unfit for service by the Army due to the wear on his body from professional football and wrestling. However, to bolster rosters throughout the NFL, teams were signing retired stars to try and hold a minimal level of play and hold fan interest around the league. The Bears contacted Nagurski, gave him a contract for $5,000 to play offensive and defensive tackle. With Bronco on the line to create openings, The Bears finished the 1943 season second in rushing yards, but it's what he did in the final game of the season against the Chicago Cardinals that sealed his legendary status on the gridiron. The Bears needed a win in that game for the West Division title, but despite outplaying the Cardinals for most of the afternoon, they were down 24-14 heading into the fourth quarter. The Cardinals fans in Comiskey Park were smelling an upset for their first win of the season. As the Bears broke their huddle on their first drive of the fourth quarter, a collective gasp spread through the crowd when they saw Nagurski take up his old position in the backfield. Yes, though, I'm sure it was exciting to be part of that crowd. There was no doubt who would be getting the ball. Quarterback Sid Luckman took the snap, spun, and stuffed the ball into Broncos' gut. The Cardinals' defense masked at the point of attack, but Nagurski pushed them back for a small gain. Nagurski continued to take the ball and push back the swarming Cardinals' defense. Finally, from 1 yard out, Bronco plunged across the goal line and the Bears were back in the game. Two Luckman touchdown passes on the next two drives gave the Bears a 35-24 win and the Western Division title. In the NFL Championship game against the Washington Redskins, Nagurski carried the ball 11 times for 34 yards and scored a second quarter touchdown in the Bears' dominant 41-21 victory. After the game, Bronco retired from the NFL for the second and final time. Nagurski returned to wrestling in October of 1946. That's when he defeated Sander Szabo for the Pacific Coast Heavyweight Championship. For the most part, Nagurski spent his later wrestling career filling arenas from coast to coast. He did spend one more turn in the spotlight before retiring from the ring for good. A young wrestler named Vern Gagne grew up idolizing Nagurski for both his exploits on the field and in the wrestling ring. Actually, the parallels between Nagurski and Gagne were closer than most people are aware of. Gagne attended the University of Minnesota, same as Nagurski, where he played football and competed in wrestling. He was such a complete wrestler that he won two NCAA titles. Another striking similarity between the two is that in 1947, after finishing college, Gagne was drafted in the 16th round by the Chicago Bears. Gagne asked if he could wrestle professionally in the offseason, but George Halas was having none of it. Since wrestling would provide a much better payout than professional football ever could, Gagne opted for professional wrestling. On December 26, 1957, Nagurski and Gagne won the NWA World Tag Team title over Johnny Valentine and Chet Wallach. They held the belts until March of 1958. After that, Bronco retired from wrestling for the second and final time. In 2009, Nagurski's legendary dual sport dominance was officially cemented when he was inducted into the National Wrestling Hall of Fame as a George Tragos Luthez honoree. For pro football fans who are somehow unaware of Bronco's accomplishments in the early days of the NFL, what you should know now is that Nagurski was a once-in-a-generation pure athlete who dominated two of the most brutal sports of his time. We'll feature Bronco's football honors when I do the episode highlighting the football life of one of my all-time favorite Chicago Bears. In the meantime, Zozo and I hope you enjoyed this trip into the past where we brought to you this body-slamming side of Nagurski's athletic career.
Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network and were able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history, but as far as I'm concerned, We're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, you know, that can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you gotta do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you gotta do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.